bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Ally. All right, set your iPhones to stun. It's time for We Have Communicators.
You can't crack up when he does it.
No, it's better when he cracks
okay,
up.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm all serious now.
No, I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPad, and iTunes, and all that other stuff, and Star Trek, and... not really going to talk about Star Trek.
Yes, we are. You know we will.
Just a tiny bit. Just how I feel like we live in Star Trek.
We do.
Yeah.
It's the age of the pad.
Yeah. So Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm really good. It's 420. We've all smoked dupes, right?
Been
smoking
dupes
all day.
Oh, yeah, the 420 reference.
Right.
There you go.
Smoking dupes.
The funny thing is, for Adam, it is actually right now.
Almost, yeah. It just passed.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it just passed.
Maybe it didn't.
See, Michael, there's this weird thing where we're all in different time zones.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. Whoa. So Adam, his time zone, it's actually just after 4:20 in the afternoon.
So there are like...
Yeah, it's like I'm living in the past, man.
There are more than one 4:20s. There are like multiple 4:20s in a day.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't
it? So, like, you could smoke dubs, like, every hour?
Yeah, and actually...
and it would be okay?
Okay, here's a pro tip for you.
Okay.
Get yourself one of the old style digital clocks where it's actually little tablets.
Oh, I love those. Those are so cool.
Yeah, and set it to 4:20 and unplug it.
Boom. That's a pro tip for everyone, not just for me.
Yeah, well, you know.
Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer.
Hey, it's great to be here, and I apologize for giving people tips on how to use illegal drugs. I look forward to your emails.
How to circumvent the law to smoke weed all the time, right? Because it's legal to... That's what I've been told anyway.
I'm sure you have.
Oh,
you,
right.
Michael, you have that chronic glaucoma.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of glaucoma. Okay, so moving right into real matters. The first thing I want to talk about before we hit the show, the full, you know, content of the show, is advertisers. And I've gotten some emails regarding our advertisers. Some advertisers, you know, some advertisers advertise products that we don't use, and which is fine, you know, because they pay for it and we talk about it, and that's the deal. So to distinguish whether or not it's a recommendation from us or not is, we'll say we recommend it, or I don't know, we use it. So if you hear us say that we use a particular product... So like if Adam and I say that we use a product, or if Jeff says that he uses a product, I'm guessing that they're probably telling the truth. I'm telling the truth, right?
You know, I always tell the truth about the products.
Yes.
Yeah. So if I say I use a product or it's really cool, I really like it, I'm saying it because it's true.
Yeah. And if we're reading a, some copy, if we say advertising time and we read a copy and we don't say that we... love it, then we may or may not love it. Doesn't mean we don't love it, but it doesn't mean that we do. And that's just addressing some emails that we've gotten. I won't mention which sponsor we've gotten emails about, because I don't know. I guess that would be bogus.
That would be bogus.
Sure.
Dude.
Yeah. So that's the first thing we had to get out of the way. And the second thing is the show title. I've come to a decision. I've gotten a lot of votes on the Twitter regarding We Have Communicators. And I've decided to go with We Have Communicators because it's, you know, it's catchy. And it has something to do with Star Trek.
It has nerd references in it.
Nerd references. There we go.
you know, good. Michael, that's going to get you dates.
Yeah, like crazy. And then when I tell them that Adam Christensen came up with it, even more, right?
Oh, yeah.
All that geek cred.
Yeah, that's the selling point.
Well, the geek cred.
Yeah, you're totally going to score, Michael. Totally.
Good. All right. Okay. So, yeah, and one other thing that I wanted to talk about is that I'm selling my iPad, and I've come to this decision because mainly
it was 4:20 just a few minutes ago, and you used that as an excuse to get stoned, right?
Yes. I'm not sure how that works, but sure. But also, more seriously, I'm getting rid of the iPad not because it isn't good and isn't totally cool, and I'm sad that I want to get rid of my iPad because it's fun to play with, but I can't justify having it for $700 because, you know, I got the 64 gigabyte iPad.
We are talking about your iPad, right? And not something else?
The iPad. We're talking about the iPad.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Did Jeff confuse it with the 420 reference?
You said you weren't getting rid of it because not just because it's not fun to play with. I just wanted, it got a little confusing there.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's totally fun to play with. It's, it's fun to have. It's just not $700 worth of fun. Right. Or fun plus productivity equals $700. So I'm going to get rid of it because I feel like I can do, well, of course I can do most of the stuff on my computer. I can do all of the stuff on my computer. I won't have access to the iBook store, right? But, you know.
Well, you will in a few months.
I will in a few months on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And I can read stuff on the internet, right? Ebooks on the internet.
Well, okay. So here, question, just quick side question related to that. I mean, don't you both think that Apple at some point has to give us an app for our iBooks on our Macs?
I think they're going to say that's iTunes.
Do you think iTunes will support reading iBooks on the desktop? It has to, right?
Yeah.
It's really lame that it doesn't right now. I just can aside even, there, because I have iBooks in there and you can't, they're just sitting there. You can look at them and then sync them to your iPad and that's it right now.
Right. Can you even browse the iBook store through iTunes or does it?
No.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that all will be fixed is the point. So back to why you're getting rid of your iPad.
Yeah. It's fantastic for watching videos on. I watched a lot of Netflix. I used Air Video. I did.
Netflix on it is awesome.
It's super cool.
I'm hooked on Netflix now because let me tell you two reasons why. One, a lot of the audio, I think, is encoded originally in like the DTS 5.1 or whatever, and I can't hear it on my darn TV because I don't have it plugged into a surround sound system. Mm-hmm. And so I have to like have the volume up, and usually I'm watching movies at night and my wife's trying to sleep and it's just a whole bad situation. So you're turning it down, turning it up, and awful. Headphones and an iPad solves it all. It's
magic.
Awesome.
You know what I did notice about the iPad and watching video on it? I have a pair of Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely had issues with Bluetooth audio, with latency and stuff like that. It's fantastic on the iPad for watching video. Because it's coming out of the native player regardless of what you're watching it through. So they must mm-hmm. be doing something pretty intelligent to keep audio and video synced up through Bluetooth, because I haven't had any issues with it. It's fantastic.
Well, a lot of that probably has to do with the speed of the processor.
Yeah, but still, even on my computer, if I watch some video on my computer over Bluetooth, I feel like it's not as synced as it was on the iPad.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think that the process of getting the audio through to Bluetooth is more intimately linked with the video playback, as it isn't as much on the computer, mostly because it's probably going through Flash, right? Because I'm watching YouTube or Hulu or something. So maybe that's it. Maybe it was just a Flash thing. But yeah, that's also a good thing. If you want, I would recommend the Bluetooth headphones. I'm using the Jaybird headphones, the SB1s. And those are pretty sweet. They're over the ear. And yeah.
too wired over the ear, so I don't know. I've never gotten into the Bluetooth thing.
Once you see, you know, I got it for free because I'm testing them out and talking about them. And I wouldn't have normally purchased them, you know, outright because it's like $100. And
Wait a minute. I mean, now that you have tried them, though, would you buy them?
Not these.
I'd be interested.
Not this particular pair, for me anyway. And it's a personal decision because I care about the fact that you can't skip a track using the headphones. You can't skip forward or go back. Even though those controls are on there, they only work for certain handsets, I guess. But they don't work on my iPhone. They don't work on the iPad. So that's a big bummer. And so they say use voice control. And you can call that up by holding the main button on the headphones, except when you're running with it, except when you're using the Nike Plus thing. And at that point, voice control is disabled. Not sure why, but for whatever reason, it's disabled. And so you can't really control anything in that mode. But otherwise, they sound good, and they have good battery life.
Cool. Are they rechargeable?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Sorry, another side.
No, that's good.
And by the way, if you really want to rock out, type in jbird.com to your into your browser. But
really, I just did that.
I was
going to
look them up on Safari, and I actually accidentally typed jbird into the URL section instead of the search, and I was rocking out. That was awesome.
jbirdgear.com is the URL you want.
Yeah, just the letter J and then bird.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You rock out.
Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to rock out right now. We're already rocking out, right?
Yeah,
podcast.
I wish I could remember the song that's playing. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it wasn't approved by the RIAA for that site. I don't think.
Probably not. So it's $89 for the sports band. If you're a runner, I think they're fantastic. I've used in-ear or pseudo in-ear headphones for running, and they fall out. And these are pretty comfortable. They go right over your head. And they stay on. They sound good, and they're pretty loud. They only have that, track control issue. So if you don't care about that, then I would say they're a good pair of headphones to get. But moving back to getting back on the rails, right? So I'm going to sell my iPad. I think that's a done deal, unless you guys have anything to say against it.
Well, you're going completely the opposite direction. So you're going from small and portable to incredibly unwieldy and full-featured.
Yeah. I got a 17-inch laptop, too, a MacBook Pro. So, and I'm very much happy with it. And I'm going to use it for a lot of things. Unlike the iPad, because it's running the iPhone OS, I can't really do a whole lot. I mean, I can do a lot, but, you know.
It's funny that you bring this up because I was actually just, I've been using my iPad. I've been taking it around, trying to use it for different levels of work, trying to figure out if, you know, is this, because the question I'm getting asked a lot, two main questions with the iPad. One, do I need the 3G? And I'm trying to answer that right now. I'm actually spending today living on Wi-Fi, which has been really interesting. And Michael, you made me violate the rule by accident. Because I was just not smart about how I was setting up my iPhone. But I'll tell you about that in a minute. But
okay.
Then the second question has been, can I really get real work done on this? Like, can it be a laptop replacement? And I would tend to agree with you. So far, I've kind of discovered, I think Steve Jobs defined it perfectly when he did the keynote, is what I'm coming to realize, that it sits between your iPhone and your laptop. But for most people, and I'm not saying for everybody, I'm saying for most people who use a laptop today to get work done, this is not going to, it can't replace their laptop. And I think the iPhone OS is one of those problems. Now, the story may change depending on how fast switching and multitasking work, because that's one of the hangups I'm having right now. Because I do it to do research, to write notes, and to not have my notes application open and be able to be surfing the web and stuff at the same time and kind of move back and forth really quickly between those two things does make it's a little harder to work on. It's not impossible, but it's harder and it's not as efficient. So
yeah, there are more steps.
If you want to work efficiently, if you want to work efficiently, I don't think the iPad today, you can in the same way that you'd work on a notebook. So if you're used to working on a notebook, this isn't going to replace it. Now, if your notebook experience is just consumption of materials, media, reading, you know, you're not writing a lot, you're not writing a novel, you're not doing stuff like that, then yeah, you might be able to replace it. But I think for guys like you who are actually trying to use this device to be out and mobile and get work done, a notebook's going to serve you better.
Yeah, and honestly, yeah. For the if there comes an application that blows me away, and eventually I'm sure that will happen. It just hasn't happened yet. So right now, I feel like the focus is with the iPad applications that are out there and interesting to me. There are a lot of utility apps like this Delivery Status Touch, which is fantastic. I love that application for tracking packages. It's really cool on the iPad. But I can do that on my iPhone and I can do that on my computer. And it's not really necessary on the iPad for me. But the utility apps are pretty nice. Again, I can get most of them on my iPad or, you know, get them on the computer. The art and drawing and that sort of genre of application for the iPad is pretty cool, but there's no, and Jeff, you may correct me on this, but there's no stylus that works well enough to justify having this for a drawing tool.
Yeah, well, some people are having pretty good luck with the Pogo plug.
Mm-hmm.
And
Pogo stylus sketch.
Excuse me, Pogo. And so I need to try that out.
I have a Pogo stylus. It's the smaller one. But I think both of them have the same little pom-pom on the bottom, right? The same size little sponge thing.
I think it's the same size on both.
Okay. See, and I feel like that's not fine enough for really doing good illustrations, at least for me anyway, for doing illustrations that I would want to have a device like the iPad to use. I would much rather get like a little Wacom tablet.
All right. So I have one of the little Pogo stylus things sitting around somewhere. So I'll dig it out and try it and let you know what I think. Because
yeah.
What I've been doing so far has just been with my fingertip.
And what app have you been using for that?
Which one is it?
The Adobe app?
Well, I've done some with the Adobe app.
Which is a neat app, by the way. Just credit to Adobe. As much as we bash on Flash, that little, what do they call that thing? Like, Ideas, Adobe Ideas.
Adobe Ideas. It's actually a very, very cool little application.
I'm pretty meh about that app. I think the buttons
it's
are way too
small.
Because
you don't get what it is that you're playing with.
The buttons are too small. I'm really irritated by the UI more than the functionality.
It is kind of strange.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very strange UI, but keep in mind it came from Adobe, so there you have it. But the more important thing is that Adobe Ideas is more of a proof of concept application.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so when you look at what they're doing with the application, separate from the interface, which clearly needs work, it's actually a very, very cool program. Because it makes it very easy to use your finger as an art stylus.
Right.
Correct
me if I'm wrong. It seemed to me like it's just one of those apps that's meant to replace kind of the napkin at the coffee shop or whatever. You've got a concept. You've got something you just want to sketch out real quick and you want to do that. The other thing I want to point out, the one feature that I was kind of impressed with was also the color palette, where you can go into a photo and sort of sample a palette out of it.
Yeah, that's a very cool little feature. And keep in mind, Adobe Ideas is a proof of concept application. And so it will get better over time, and it will be a cool thing. Now, the application that I've been playing with a lot just recently is Art Studio. And so I've been doing drawings with that, and everything I've done so far has been with my fingertip. And I had completely forgotten I had that little Pogo stylus. So I'll go dig that out after we're done recording.
That's only 99¢, Art Studio for iPad.
Oh, it's only $1? I've bought so many applications in the past 2 weeks.
Wow.
I have no idea.
I haven't purchased.
I might have to grab that one if it's only $1. Yeah. I used brushes on my iPhone for a while, which I liked. And I think they have an iPad version. I don't even know if mine was upgraded. I haven't tried it yet.
I think they do have an iPad version, yeah.
Yeah. Crap. So I'm probably going to have to go buy that now.
Yeah, too. Brushes for iPad is $10. It's not a universal. I actually haven't purchased any iPad apps yet. I just use the universal ones or the free ones. So that's one thankful detail about me selling the iPad. But so aside from the art applications, which, you know, some of them are cool. I really like Sketches, for example. If you already own Sketches 2 for the iPhone, it's a universal application, so you can get an update and use it on your iPad, and it's pretty great. Again, for me, I just couldn't see myself doing any useful sketching on the iPad. I would much rather get something else. I just, you know, trying to justify the full cost of the iPad based on that doesn't work for me. And, you know, maybe not fair, but still. And then the third major category I think you have with the iPad is the news consumption, right? Feed readers and Instapaper and browsing in general. Again, really comfortable and really cool and feels a lot like Star Trek, and it's exciting, but I can't justify that price. Maybe I should have gotten a smaller iPad. I don't know.
I really do think what I was saying earlier is you came to the conclusion that I think a certain percentage of people really are going to come to. And it's just that this is a device, this is a category of device that doesn't fit into my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I think a lot of geeks and people are like worried that's not okay, that this is the new hot thing. And if you're a nerd, you have to have it. And I think I even said this before it came out. I think it's almost the opposite way. I really don't think this device is for really geeky people. As much as we all want it to be for us, it's going to fit the usage pattern of your average, typical, normal internet user.
Yeah.
I think there's two categories of people. Sorry. That this is going to fit really well for. And you totally hit the first group, which is right. Non-geeky, non-technical, someone that wants an easy portable device that just gives them that clean interface to work with. And there's nothing wrong with making a device that serves that market. Now, the other group that I see getting really excited about this are the people like us that are typically going to the bleeding edge of technology and trying to push our devices beyond what the manufacturers envisioned. Mm-hmm. But we also have a very clear and focused idea on how we're going to use a device like this.
Right.
Like, you know, for me, that's exactly what I had. And I had that vision years before the iPad came out. I was just waiting for it to happen. And there are many situations where packing up my MacBook Pro and taking it with me is just complete overkill for the functions that I know I'm going to need to handle at that time.
You know, I may end up getting in that position very quickly now that I have a 17-inch computer that doesn't fit in my bag. So
right. I mean, Jeff's making the good point, and I'll give you one more. There's actually this kind of third category that I think is still unanswered, but we're going to see the applications of, and I mentioned this before as well, and it's these verticals. So,
you know,
doctors with specific applications, there's going to be a lot of enterprise applications that aren't even made for mass consumption that are real specific to certain business categories. But I think the thing that you're talking about, Jeff, too, is the type of people like myself who, yes, I see the specific uses I'm going to have for it. But I think what Michael's coming to is that for some people, that's a hard cost justification because you've got an iPhone, you're paying a big contract there, you've got a laptop, you've spent a certain amount of money in there, and now you have this third device. So you and I and Michael are going to have all three devices. The iPad's not going to replace one of those devices for us.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Absolutely right. This becomes another tool that I use for specific things.
And that's hard to cost to justify for a lot of people, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I know that I'm going to get an iPad eventually. I just need to wait for that killer application.
And I'm just trying to get us to say to those people who are having a hard time justifying the cost and go, I already have an iPhone and I'm not going to get rid of that. And I already have a MacBook and I'm not going to get rid of that. And I already have an iMac and I'm not going to get rid of that. And my wife's already peeved that I've spent all this money.
Yeah.
Don't end your marriage over an iPad. It's okay.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, there are some people where the iPhone is the right device. Other people, it's going to be the iPod Touch. It's the same thing. You find the devices that are right for you and then buy them. And yeah. if they're not right for you, that's okay.
Yeah. Though I think the bottom line, at least in my opinion, for the iPad is that it's a content consumption device, at least at this point.
And that's going to change. I really think.
I think it's going to change too.
Version
yeah.
2 and the apps are really going to change that. So if you're really wanting one right now, but you can't find a place and just justify it, I would say open up a savings account.
Yeah.
Put, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks a month in there and wait 8 months. Guess what?
It's going to be cheaper.
It's
going to
be a new device
better.
For you, and you're going to have the cash on hand to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's not brand new hardware, when iPhone OS 4 hits the iPad, it will be a brand new device again.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's part of why they're waiting until October to release 4.0 for the iPad, right? Because I think we're going to see an interface for multitasking at least that's different from the iPhone version. Because with the iPhone, you have screen size limitations. And with the iPad, you have a lot of room to do some cool stuff. You know, maybe right. an expose kind of thing or something to that effect.
You know, I don't think it's going to be that much different than, compared to the iPhone, because Apple has this proven track record of developing interfaces that are very consistent. So I think what we'll see for the multitasking interface on the iPad will probably be very similar to whatever we ultimately get on the iPhone. But it will be enhanced to take advantage of the bigger screen.
Sure. And I hope we get more file access in 4.0. I feel like that has to come. I think that what they put in there for 3.2 on the iPad is just
something to... It's like telling developers, oh, all you need to do are make web apps. Everyone will be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that.
It's a little deficient.
It's the fake plan, right? It's the holdover until they can actually get something cool going. Is that
what
you're implying?
Can I ask you guys a question about something related, somewhat related to that, the file access? So going through iTunes is just it's not ideal. First of all, let me just throw that out there. But secondly, there's kind of been a big deal made about. And I think developers kind of somewhat have access to this on the iPad already, because I think I've seen it working at least with Keynote. Apple's at least enabled it. And that is being able to use like mail.app, and then it'll recognize the pages file and then say open in pages. That's part of the new directory access.
Yeah, your application can say that it recognizes specific app document types, and then the OS will be aware of that when you pull that up in Safari or Mail.
Right, and I think they just added this to GoodReader on the iPad.
Yes,
so
they did.
I think it is in the 3.2 SDK. I don't think it's in the... I don't know if you can do it with iPhone apps yet, but you certainly will be able to do it in 4.0 with third-party apps. So my question there is that what I didn't understand, though, is when I do that, because everything's still sandboxed, right, it's making a copy of that. Is this right? Is it making a copy of that file from Mail and putting it into sort of GoodReader's application space? So this really wouldn't be, and this is where Apple's going to have some challenges, I think, with the iPad and the iPhone OS 4.0 and file management, is that if it's just making copies around, that's going to make collaboration on a device like the iPad or the iPhone not work very well. And that is a big component to what a lot of people do in terms of content creation. So it gets back to kind of my earlier argument that right now the iPad does not feel like it's ready to be a really good content creation device. Yes, you can do stuff with it. You can edit stuff with it. You can create stuff with it. I don't want to, you know, mix words or seem like I'm saying you can't create things with the iPad. But compared to other tools that we have available, it's deficient in some ways. And this is one of those ways that I see.
Oh, most definitely. Now, I have a feeling that you're right, that soon, relatively soon, we will see changes that make file management easier. We can see a little bit of that right now, say with using GoodReader and its ability to tie into your Mobile Me account and your Dropbox. And I actually use my Dropbox as my tool to get documents onto my iPad. And and yes, I end up with a copy in my Dropbox, then that gets copied to my iPad. And then if it's, say, a spreadsheet that I'm going to open in Numbers, then it gets copied into Numbers. Okay, now I have all these multiple versions of the document. That's a pain in the ass. But it's the first step to getting us to the point where we can have that document in one place and use it and have it synchronized back and forth. And it wouldn't surprise me to see some of that happen as Apple continues to flesh out the online iWeb service.
Right. Now, wait, so now in Numbers, can you save back to your, you can save back to your iDisk, but you can, obviously can't save back to Dropbox, right?
Right.
So if Numbers could save back to Dropbox, Dropbox would handle your sort of file synchronization, right? Because it would allow you to overwrite and keep track of the versions.
Yes.
I would assume, right?
Yes, and then the only time, well, so actually if I put something in Dropbox and then take it into GoodReader, I now have one copy. Then right. Open it into Numbers, I now have a second copy. But if I could then save back to my Dropbox, I could then delete the copy out of GoodReader, and now I have a synchronized file system.
Right, but still, I mean, it's still kind of hacky and workaround-y. And,
oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
There needs to be a better way to juggle files between applications.
Well, actually, if I could save straight to Dropbox from from Numbers, that would eliminate the problem because then I would also be able to open files from Dropbox.
Mm-hmm. Right. It gets weird because even if you just had the ability with Numbers, since it came out of GoodReader, you know, if you went from GoodReader to Numbers, if you could just save from Numbers back into GoodReader and it would recognize, hey, these are updates and overwrite that original file just like it would on a normal file system, then... I mean, that's part of the problem. I don't know that the problem is Apple's sandboxing. It's more, how do you manage documents moving between sandboxed environments and keeping them in sync? It's kind of a big challenge. But, you know, I understand why Apple wants the sandboxing of applications in there on a device like the iPad or the iPhone.
Yeah.
I'm shaking my head because... No, I'm not at you, at the whole document system that Apple's created so far. It's a complete pain in the ass. And seeing how Apple has managed other processes where they release a product and we're going, where the hell are the features that we should have on this? The very basic features. And then over time, they start rolling out, and eventually the sting of being the early adopter and not having features goes away because we get the features and we move on. So I'm assuming that we'll see the same progression with the iPad, and hopefully this fall with iPhone OS 4 for the iPad, those headaches will go away.
Well, yeah.
I think a big first step, if you ask me, would be move file management out of iTunes and build something into the Finder for managing iPhones and iPods, basically any iPhone OS device.
Yeah. I don't think it wouldn't be too big of a deal for Apple to change the way that's recognized. You can get an application from Google Code, I think it's iPhone Disk or something like that, that will just mount your iPhone and or presumably your iPad without jailbreaking to your desktop. And you can.
But will it show all of those folders? Because I haven't tried it, and I know they just issued an update. I have the utility from Ecamm.
Yeah,
iPhone Disk.
That's a different
whatever.
Thing. But as far as I know, the way that the directories are set up right now, iTunes, from what it looks like, doesn't actually look at those application directories. Directly, it looks like that's kind of handled by the device and says, you know, the device says here, you know, I have this application with these documents. What do you want to do? And then iTunes hands it to the device, the iPad, and right. Then the iPad throws it into a specific folder. But it's all within that writable partition, the user partition. So I don't think it would be too big of a deal. Just, you know, changing some preferences or links to specific folders, and then ta-da, you have access. You know,
it's broken
mobile device, iPhone, right? There is evidence that the iPad will become more useful in the future. There is a report out that according to Apple, or according to someone who's asked Apple or talked to Apple about it, the camera kit will support audio out using USB. You heard about this?
Now, no one's actually confirmed this.
Right. It's not confirmed. But according to Create Digital Music, there'll be the camera out kit, the one that it looks like a just a little dock connector with a USB cable on the end, or a USB connection on the end, rather. So you can plug in a USB device into the bottom using this little adapter. And it's for the camera. It's meant to plug in your digital camera and pull off the photos. But supposedly, it will also support the USB audio class over USB.
Nice. So I could plug in my USB Samsung mic and then use it potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
The only question I would have is there actually enough power for that sort of thing? Probably not, I would guess.
Oh, yeah. If it's powered via USB.
Yeah. So you'd probably need a mic or a USB audio device that had its own external power source. But it just the fact that it would work at all as a USB audio input is cool.
Now, I suppose you could always plug a powered USB hub into your iPad and then plug your powered USB mic into that.
Yeah, possibly.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't see why not. I don't know how USB works, but, you know, technically. But, yeah.
Clunky and slow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that opens a potential for me. One of the really cool things that I've been looking forward to on the iPad is a solution like the Plaid Lemur. That's the guy. Lemur. It's just called the Lemur. And the Lemur is a hardware controller for DJing applications and stuff like what's that program that musicians use for sampling and mixing and stuff like that? I can't remember what it's called.
Logic?
No, yeah. But I think it would work with Logic. Anything that really uses the a MIDI controller, a MIDI interface. But you could, you know, if you're a DJ, you're using, in addition to your computer, you're using an external device to control the software on your screen because it's easier than moving a mouse around and doing things. And you can get your, you know, both hands on this device and turn knobs and do things at the same time that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do with your mouse. So the hardware device is fantastic. And the Lemur is a multi-touch device for doing those sorts of things and various musicians, electronic musicians, and otherwise use this device to, you know, create custom interfaces for controlling the software and doing really interesting things with it. And that's a $2,000 device. And of course, the iPad being $500 is way more attractive as a solution for that, assuming there's an application. And I've seen a lot of DJ apps, but so far, and going back to the USB audio thing, the developers claim that the iPad only supports one audio out. So if you're a DJ, you want to have the main audio out as well as a headphone out so you can preview what you're playing next and get your track set up correctly. So that would be another thing I'm looking forward to. I got off track with what I was saying. Have you guys tried Opera Mini?
I have not.
No. I did get a screenshot, though, from a listener. this is important because everybody's really excited about Opera Mini, but it was rendering web pages really poorly, in his opinion. And he gave an example of Apple's online store and showed me two screenshots. And basically, like, all the images were wrapped incorrectly and it just wasn't rendering properly.
Oh, interesting. Like,
well,
maybe they were using Opera to render it.
Well, Opera doesn't go straight to a web page,
right?
Like any other web browser does. It's actually going to the Opera servers, and then they're going and getting the content and re-rendering it and sending it to the application on your iPhone.
Right.
Which totally sucks. And I have not bothered to download Opera for the iPhone because I don't have a lot of interest in it. I did a series at Mac Observer a few years ago where I spent a week using only one web browser and just went through several different browsers doing this. And 1 week was with Opera. And one of the rules I had was I can't switch to another browser during the week.
Oh, man.
I just have to do everything in that one browser. And I had to break the rule with Opera because it just sucked ass that much. And I mean, it was really bad. I think I described it along the lines of, it's like the bully that waits around the corner on the playground, socks you in the stomach, and takes your lunch money.
Hmm. That doesn't sound pleasant.
No.
Well, so, Michael, have you tried it out? I mean, my one question, I guess, on the iPhone is, what is broken about Safari on the iPhone that people don't...
Well, I think that the advantage for Opera is the speed, right? Because everything's being rendered and sent out to your phone in this special compressed way, so stuff is for the most part pre-rendered and you just kind of have to render up the whatever compressed portion of the website. And I've heard that it does give you a lot of speed, but unfortunately, I guess none of us have used it yet. I downloaded it on my phone before I
I'm trying it right now.
Okay.
I'm downloading it right now, even though
this is live, folks. We are doing this on our iPhones live.
I'm putting it on my iPod Touch.
Okay, so if I want to go to Facebook, I'm loading up
Opera
Facebook.
Opera Mini web browser?
It has that top sites thing.
So I went to Apple's website, and it's got this cool iPad with four giant, huge blocks in the middle. Let me refresh. I got the two sides of the iPad, but the middle is just four giant gray blocks. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, I see that too. I think it's because they're using Opera to render the page. Even though it's off on a server somewhere, it's still using
Opera. So this is exactly what this guy was sending me screenshots of. And so he went to the Apple store. I'm going to try it now and see if it's still the way he sent it to me. The screenshots are up on my site. But yeah,
Mattcast.com.
So if you compare its rendering of Apple's store site to Safari or any other browser, yeah, it's like the iPad is on one line and then the iPhone is next to it, and then all the other products, it's not rendering properly. And it's not like Apple's website is using some weird standards that aren't
wouldn't that be ironic
CSS or anything like that. So that was kind of his frustration, is, well, it's not even showing me just normal websites properly.
Yeah, and it's showing what you see is not fantastic. The performance of zooming and panning around is pretty great, but you know, my 5 second playing with it review of Opera Mini for the iPhone is try it, it's free.
Okay, here's my 5 second review. We tried it, it's free, save the bandwidth.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I can't judge it, but
I can. This is total crap.
Fair enough.
That much faster, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not only is it crap, but it's crap that wastes pixels on a tiny screen because it's got that menu bar thing at the bottom plus the URL bar at the top and then the Opera bar above that. This is like completely unreadable. This is...
Yeah, and it doesn't render iPhone Alley right either, so just forget it.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
it doesn't render iPhone Alley right. It doesn't render Mac Observer right. And you rotate your iPhone and it doesn't resize the page.
Oh, yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's broken.
This is shit is what it is.
I know we're getting emails.
Yeah, we can.
We can say that. Yeah. People enjoy that part of the show where you say things that are naughty.
Where does the speed come in? It doesn't seem like it's any faster than Safari.
I agree. I don't think it's any faster. I'm on Wi-Fi, though, so it might be better on 3G. But, okay, yeah. So Opera Mini's out. You can try
it. This is total crap.
It's total crap.
Well, only took me 2 minutes to decide that was a waste of my bandwidth.
Sure. Okay. We have a lot more to talk about. There's the Q2 Apple results. We have a leaked next generation iPhone, of course, that Gizmodo found that we're going to be talking about. So much fun stuff. But before we do that, Jeff, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever received a call from a friend or family member regarding a computer issue.
Why in the world would my family want to call me about things like that?
Well, it's because I feel like we're all the tech support guys.
Okay, right? Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
It happens all the time.
And generally, it's frustrating if you have to talk over the phone and walk them through things.
Oh, yes, quite often.
Yeah. Wouldn't you rather have a solution where you could just, I don't know, take a look at their screen from wherever you are and maybe take control and see what's going on their computer?
That would be swell.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Okay. Go to Assist Express. We'll
this
do that
is the
for
ad,
you, Jeff.
Right?
Yeah, this is the ad. Yep. Go to Assist Express from Citrix.
Oh, I thought you were about to ask me to help you out with your computer.
Well, if I was, Jeff, you could use Go to Assist Express from Citrix to do that. So here's how it works. You sign up, free 30-day trial, go to assist.com/Allie for a free 30-day trial, and you help support the show. So you sign up for the trial, you get the application on your computer. It works on both PCs and Macs, so everyone can join the party. And so you open the application on your computer, and so let's say someone calls you and they need help with their Mac or PC. And you say, go to this URL and type in this code, this special code that you get for your support session. So they go there, they type it in, and in, I would say, a minute or less, it's really fast. It downloads a little application that goes out to the internet and hooks both of your computers together so you can see their screen, you can see what's running in the background, you can see what's installed, you can see all the hardware specifications. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted, so it's very secure, and you don't have to worry about that. And you can send files back and forth if you're on a PC. And of course, you can take control of the other person's computer. It doesn't matter if they have a Mac or PC, in which or whether you're on a Mac or a PC. Take control, see exactly what's on the screen, help them out, get stuff done quickly. It even supports up to 8 sessions at once. So if you're a support professional, you can update someone's computer on one screen and go somewhere else and help someone out with something else. And it's just fantastic. So if you want to try it free for 30 days, go to assist.com/Allie is the URL you go to get a free 30 days and support We Have Communicators. I think I'll get them to update the URL. But right now it's go to assist.com/Allie. And yeah, it's great. I use it. I enjoy it. And with that, we will move on to more iPhone and iPad stuff. Jeff.
Michael.
Have you, what's your report on the Q2 Apple results? Because you were listening to that call earlier and I was not.
Another award-winning, another record-breaking quarter. And not only record-breaking, but they did it in a quarter that's typically their slow quarter. So, hold on. $3 billion in profit. iPhone sales doubled year over year. And here we go. So $13.5 billion in revenue, $3.07 billion in profit. Let's see. iPhone sales up 131% year over year. Mac sales up 33%.
Is there a total count for how many iPhones they've sold?
Let's see. For the quarter, they moved 8.75 million iPhones.
It's a lot of iPhones.
10.89 million iPods.
A lot of iPads. iPods.
iPods.
They didn't. It was interesting. They didn't talk about, or they talked. Everybody was asking them about the iPad. All the analysts were "What about the iPad? What about the iPad?" And they kept having to reiterate, "Look, the iPad didn't go on sale in this quarter, and we'll know more next quarter." Was pretty much the answer.
Right,
most of them got. They talked about a few things, but not a lot. It was just kind of funny.
Right. They did say that iPad sales exceeded their expectations, which we kind of figured since they had the whole thing with having to delay international shipments. So
until next month, right?
Yeah, the international end of May.
May, yeah.
But you can start pre-ordering on May 10th, I believe.
Yep.
And I think it's like in 9 different countries.
Cool.
So it's like Canada, the United Kingdom, probably Japan. I'm trying to do this one from memory.
Oh, don't worry about it. Anything, I think. Anything worth, and anything interesting, anything really interesting about the Q2? Of course, there's all the numbers, you know, the sales numbers and how well Apple's done and which record breaking quarter they're in now, because they're always breaking records with their quarters. Were there any cool things that came out in the QA or anything like that?
Well, they didn't tip their hand, of course, because they never do. Although they did drop a hint about cool new products coming. They said that they're very excited about what they have in the pipeline right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of confirms to a degree what we've been expecting, which is a new iPhone will be out shortly.
Yeah.
But the way they said it, I believe they said new products. So since they did the plural, that implies that they're excited about additional products that will be coming out throughout the year. But that's no surprise at all, because Apple's always releasing new updates and revising products. So, but what we do know is that in the quarter that we're in right now, that Apple is accounting for extra shipping expenses for a product release.
Uh-huh.
So that tells me it's the iPhone.
That's interesting because according to Boy Genius Report, AT&T has once again put a block on employee vacations in June, just as they had last year for, I think it was July, right, last year, because, of course, the iPhone was launched in or released in July. And then, you know, with the original iPhone, there was the block in June. So it looks like we're getting back to the June release, which is cool because, you know, it's a month earlier. We'd all like our cool things.
Which would kind of fall in line with a potential iPhone OS 4 release too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So they'll probably announce it during WWDC, which hasn't been, the dates for that have not been announced yet, but.
Now I have a question about that. I haven't had time to go back and do the research. Have either of you checked this? When does Apple typically announce the dates for WWDC? Cause it seems like it's getting later and later.
It's getting later each year. Yeah. And well, of course there was also the 1 year that they pushed it back to August.
Yeah.
And so we had a late announcement on that one too. But this pattern that's developing is a quick turnaround from when it's announced to when it actually happens.
Yeah. I mean, give developers some time to buy some cheap tickets.
Well, I think, right? Honestly, I think that the tickets for WWDC have been selling out within like
I mean airplane tickets.
Oh, well, yeah, like, that's true.
If you have to order your airplane ticket and then fly in 2 weeks, you're not going to get a good deal on a flight.
That's true. Yeah.
No, you're not. But I mean, look what they're doing to media.
Yeah. Three days before or something like that.
On Monday, then on Thursday, they're doing an event and you have to get tickets and fly out.
That keeps the bloggers out.
Well, the bloggers who don't live in San Francisco out.
Right, exactly.
And most of them are in San Francisco.
Well, they just don't get invited anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah, we don't get invited. I mean, I don't. I won't speak for, you know, you guys. But yeah, before we do that, before we talk about the next thing, which is Gizmodo's discovery of the next generation iPhone, which is super cool. We have another sponsor. Sponsor two is Camalert for the iPhone. And what Camalert does is turn your iPhone into a camera surveillance and personal alarm system. And the way it does this is it provides a surveillance mode, which allows you to take your phone, set it up somewhere, and it uses the camera to detect motion. And when it detects motion, it will send out photos to email and MMS. And so you can use that for surveillance. You can also use it as an emergency help button, which allows you to set up emergency contacts. So if you're in trouble, press the button and it'll send out an alert to people you know that you've set up in there, along with your location if you have a device that knows its location. So I'm guessing iPhone 3GS and 3G, probably iPod, you know, best guess. That kind of thing. And there's also a panic button. So it'll do a noise, a loud, irritating, and distracting noise. So if someone's menacing you, then they'll probably run away. And it's only $5 in the App Store. Camalert, K-A-M-A-L-E-R-T, Camalert. And with that, the big story, right? Gizmodo, this to me is just fantastic. This is such a crazy story. So correct me if I get any of these details wrong. But as far as I know, it goes like this. An Apple employee who is a software engineer working on the baseband for the next generation iPhone, was at a bar. When was this? Was this last month?
Yeah, like over a month ago.
Yeah, I think it was like a month ago. It was pretty far back when this initially started happening. But so he lost it at a bar in like Redwood City or something like that. The people who found the phone say that they hung around and waited for him to come back, but he never did. I guess it worked, and it seemed like iPhone OS 4.0. And the next day, Apple killed it remotely, as they can, you know, because of the Mobile Me, and they probably have even tighter, you know, stuff for a prototype that's out in the wild. So it stopped working. A month later, I think it was it Gizmodo that broke the story that this had been discovered after the person didn't really claim it?
Was Engadget.
It was Engadget. Okay.
Yeah. Because Engadget posted photos on the weekend.
Yeah.
And Gizmodo did their videos and stuff on Monday.
Yeah. So, at some point Gizmodo/Gawker Media acquired this iPhone prototype. For I think it was $5,000.
Right.
And then they did a bunch of videos and pictures and teardowns and just went through this whole thing to figure out, you know, is this a real Apple device or is this, you know, not? Is this something else? Is this some kind of knockoff? I think there was a report a couple days ago that it might be a knockoff. And I'm convinced. I think everybody's pretty well convinced at this point. Let's ease everybody into it.
The fact that Apple asked for it back, I think, kind of
confirms it. Yeah, when you get the Apple when you get the letter from Apple's general counsel, you that's pretty good confirmation. But the cool thing about it is, and I've heard because Jeff and I, Adam probably too, we all have friends who have worked for Apple or know something about working for Apple, and they're pretty strict about secrecy and even going so far as making decoy cases for products that need to be used out in the wild, such as the case on this next generation iPhone that looked like an iPhone 3G case, right? A black, maybe encased lighter or something. But of course you take it off. And so the phone is not curved on the back. It's flat on the front, flat on the back. And it looks, and you've probably seen the pictures already, but the front and the back are both black, and then the middle portion is what looks like aluminum. The volume rocker is gone in place of two standalone buttons for the volume. Well,
I don't like that, by the way.
I don't like it either.
I think it looks dumb.
I think so,
too. So I'm hoping that's just there's a couple things on this design that I'm hoping are just because it's a prototype. And
yeah,
that is one. And the other thing that I am positive will not be there is there's like on each side, there's a seam.
Yeah, there are random seams.
There's three seams on that model.
Yeah, so that says to me clearly that would be a prototype because there's no way Jobs or Ives would let that those seams be there.
Yeah. So there's a front-facing camera for video chat, which we've heard rumors about. I think iChat coming because did we talk about that? iChat agent is running supposedly on 4.0 devices.
Yeah, right. I think we did a little bit. Yeah.
And there's also an improved back camera that we're accustomed to, plus flash. There's a flash on the back too. It's also using micro SIM, like the iPads. The iPad 3G will be using. Because they couldn't turn it on, they couldn't figure out how improved or in what way the display is improved, but they believe that the display is improved. It's high resolution.
Did they disassemble it?
They did. They eventually did disassemble it. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff is covered by metal shielding, a lot of the stuff on the board. So they couldn't really figure out what
bigger battery, right? Or was yep. wasn't there supposedly a bigger battery?
I think it's 16 right. or 17% bigger battery. Yeah, the battery takes up way a much larger portion of the device, and it looks like the board kind of wraps around the other components. But it's, you know, they're all tight in there, and it looks like that's probably about what's going to happen.
So you know, let me know when it's. It's okay for me to start.
Yeah, Jeff, go.
Go.
Okay, this might take a couple minutes. All right, first, keep in mind that Apple, like other companies, will make testbed shells. So the shell that we saw on this iPhone is very likely not what we will see in a shipping device, and it probably doesn't look hardly anything like that. And Apple is very good with keeping that consistent look across their products. So those ugly buttons on the side will go away for the traditional rocker switch. And the flat back may or may not be there. Flat is cheaper to make and would give you more room to play with the inside of this testbed device as they pull it apart and put new things in. So I am absolutely certain that this is a prototype device that does not represent the physical appearance of the final shipping version of the next iPhone. It also means we may not see a front-facing camera because it's a prototype. And this was lost like a month ago. And who's to say what we have for final features? Flash, I think we'll see that, you know, like the LED flash, not Adobe Flash. And we'll see. As far as will we have video chat on there, I would be absolutely stunned. Because if you think that Apple, or since Apple is apparently not happy with video chatting on the iPad, hence no camera, can you imagine how much worse that would be on a little handheld device like that?
I think that the big reason they didn't put video or any camera on the iPad is because, at least for chatting, is because you'd have to hold it up, right? That was
right.
always
you
my
have to do
big...
the same thing with an iPhone.
Well, you're going to be holding up your iPhone anyway.
Right, but if you're holding up your iPhone anyway and you're just doing an audio chat or a text chat, no one can see the damn thing bouncing around and they're not going to get seasick.
You don't look like a bad reality show.
Yeah, you won't look like a bad reality show.
You can always
so
sit or stop moving.
So I will be very surprised if we have the video chatting on the next iPhone.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, and the battery that's in there, that may or may not be what we actually have. I would assume Apple was testing out all different kinds of batteries to see what was happening with different voltages and different components. So, yeah, who knows what kind of battery we'll really see in the device. Microsim totally makes sense because Apple already set the precedent with the iPad with 3G support. It's going to have Microsim, so why not standardize? Which would also, I think, make Apple the first manufacturer to do a microSIM smartphone in the United States.
That's my understanding of it, yeah.
Yeah. So now I want to pick apart Gizmodo a little bit.
Okay, go.
Yay.
Okay. So the whole story about how they came into possession of this phone, there mm-hmm. are some really big holes. And if I was Apple's legal department and if I was part of the local law enforcement team, I would be very, very interested in talking with the Gizmodo staff about what happened. Now, the whole thing with the phone was found in the bar, plausible. The whole thing with the guy didn't know what he had and it looked like one thing, but then something else later on. Okay, I'm not buying that at all. I'm thinking that whoever was messing around with this phone had a really good idea of what they were holding on to, because they would not have started contacting companies like Gizmodo and Engadget to sell them the device. So this yep. person knew exactly what they had. This is a stolen phone. And I'm not making a big leap here with my logic path. It just, everything fits together. This is a stolen phone. This person knew they had a stolen phone. And when they started shopping it around, they knew exactly what they were doing. Engadget didn't bite. and they didn't go for the phone. Gizmodo did. They had absolutely had to have known they were buying a stolen phone.
Can you clarify, what do you mean by stolen? As in the person who was selling it stole it from somebody else, or they did possibly find it, but they knew
they may,
it was
they
not.
May have found the phone.
Okay.
But they did not return it, and they knew what they had.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is a stolen phone.
Yeah, and technically, I think that Gizmodo pointed out, according to California law, they have a year to pick it up before it becomes the possession of whoever found it, right?
Doesn't matter. Because this, they knew that they were buying stolen property. And this person knew that they were selling a phone that wasn't theirs to someone else. This is a stolen phone. So, you know, the whole thing with, well, we had a year... Bullshit.
No,
this
I mean,
is a stolen phone.
Apple had a year to get it back.
It doesn't matter. That's completely irrelevant. I mean, that's like saying, oh, and by the way, Steve Jobs' car is silver. So, you know, it's okay.
No, I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm saying that it's not okay because of that whole year. It's not theirs.
You're right. It's not okay.
Yeah.
But the whole argument that Gizmodo started throwing out about, well, you know, the California law, we have a year or they have a year to get it back and all that.
No, they bought it. Yeah, that's not according to the
matter.
Law.
Yeah, they bought a stolen phone.
Yep.
So there are these big gaps in the story about how the phone left the possession of the poor guy at Apple that lost
it. He's going to be dead.
And they outed the guy too.
Yeah, they did with a big picture
horrible.
And everything.
Oh, that was horrible, horrible to do. So
I'm sure Apple already knew who it was, but I mean, the public didn't need to know who this guy was.
Yeah, Apple knew because the phone was in his possession, and when he realized that he didn't have it, he immediately changed his pants, and then called his boss and said, "Oh my God, the prototype is gone."
Right,
right.
And then Apple did their magic where they wiped the phone so it couldn't be used. And since you can't plug it in and activate it because there's no official firmware available for it yet,
right?
It's essentially a brick.
Well, and so now I wonder too that so they buy the thing, which, like you mentioned, I was wondering, you know, is this really considered stolen property? And at what point is something considered stolen? So, you know, if I find not even an iPhone, just I find anything on the street or in a bar and I make no attempt to return it to the owners
you
or
just
turn
stole
it into
it.
The authorities, it's stolen, right?
Absolutely.
And, so I'm not confused on that.
No. I mean, you pick something up and you go, mine, stolen. I mean, that's it. There's no gray zone on this. If you take a stack of $1,000 bills and set them out on the sidewalk and someone comes by and goes, oh, someone left this money here, and they grab one bill or all of them, stolen.
Yeah.
You have.
So, yeah. So secondarily, so stolen. One, they pay money for it. So like you mentioned, they're essentially buying stolen goods and they know they're buying
not
stolen
essentially,
goods.
Essentially, quite literally.
Literally, okay. And then thirdly, they disassemble the thing. What if they broke it?
Yeah, they better hope
so
they didn't
now,
break it.
Now they're saying, well, we're going to return it. And, you know, Apple just has to ask for it back. We're going to give it back to them. Well, they damaged it and then give it back. And they have all the evidence and there's a trail and they've admitted they paid $5,000 for it and on and on.
And they have videos on their website of people holding it up and saying, look what we have.
Seems like a really nice case for somebody to get.
And now I don't know how California criminal law works because I'm not a criminal in California, nor am I involved in their legal system in any level.
Right.
But it seems very likely that with enough evidence presented, even if Apple said, you know, we really don't want to pursue criminal charges in this, the district attorney's office or city attorney's office, whoever would handle this type of a crime, can say, yeah, no, it doesn't matter because we have all the evidence and so we're going to go ahead and prosecute. And by the way, we will subpoena you as a hostile witness if we have to, but you know, it doesn't matter because we have everything here and we're still going to pursue criminal charges. So, you know, it's one of those things where maybe Apple might say, you know, bad publicity. We don't want to pursue this any farther. Or they might say, yeah, we really want to hammer people. And but it could end up being out of Apple's hands. And it could be the legal system where they are that says, nope, we're really pursuing this.
You know, I'm gonna just take a guess and say that Apple is probably not interested in taking legal action. But that's just, you know, that's my opinion. But I wonder if, you know, under what circumstances the DA would actually force that. It'll be interesting. I think that this in general is just going to be hopefully a fantastic story to follow for the next couple weeks. You know, no ill will against Gizmodo. Those guys are fantastic. I want to say that up front, but it's very interesting.
I'm going to say I'm very disappointed in Gizmodo.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jeff on this one. And I want to be clear. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know anything about the legalities of any of this stuff. I'm actually trying to get find some people who actually would know more about the specific laws surrounding this. So not making any judgment. But, you know, you have to imagine that if Engadget was offered it, you know, there was a reason Engadget decided not to take it. And some of these issues that are being brought up now, I have to imagine weighed on their mind. And I've seen a couple stories asking, you know, what would have you done? I mean, Michael, you ran an iPhone site. If one of these guys came to you and said, hey, we think we have a fourth, or we know we have a fourth gen iPhone, you know, what would you do?
If I had the cash, I would buy it right away. Actually,
see,
well,
I don't know that would be the smart
choice.
You know
what? But so that's my first knee-jerk reaction. I feel like I would be incredibly tempted, and there is a very high likelihood that I would purchase it. But there is also the likelihood that I would think about it for a few minutes, because that is a lot of money. And, you know, they have Gawker behind them. I don't have a parent company behind me. So there would be more time for me to think about spending that kind of money. And I probably would turn it down because of lack of money. And so I'd be saved.
But it's you know, we're getting in this area of you know, where does it go from being tech journalism to becoming TMZ? And Jeff, you were mentioning the story earlier, and yeah, the story seems highly, highly fishy. And I have to be honest, I mean, when I first started reading through it, one of my first things when I was reading through this story, oh yeah, drunk guy at a bar, he leaves the iPhone, some random person picks it up, can't return it to the owner, and then somehow Gizmodo and Engadget find out about it and then pay money for it. Just the whole story sounds fishy. And I'm the type of person where the logical thing is usually the right answer. And I swear I had to wonder if I was Gizmodo and I had that kind of that money and resources. You got to imagine they know who some of these engineers are and who these people are, and they have informants and contacts and people who say, oh, you know, we know this guy is working on it and has a prototype. I mean, what's to say they didn't have certain people kind of tipping them off or just keeping an eye on these guys? Yeah, I'm not saying that's what happened, but that seems much more like a much more logical story. And
oh, yeah.
It's just a story. I'm making it up. But it seems much more logical story than just some random guy found it. And then, you know, I think I read the story on Gizmodo and they said some guy saw him leave it on the chair, picked it up, and then showed it around the bar, said, is this yours? Is this yours? When it was nobody's, he found some other guy that he thought was with him and said, oh, I think this was your buddy's phone. And then that guy took it, supposedly. And that's where they got it from. I don't know.
I feel like the entire
and weird,
the whole bar story seems very like what someone would just kind of fabricate.
I think it probably was left in a bar. I just doubt that the person who found it, like Jeff was saying, didn't know what it was or what they had, and might have even been keeping an eye out for something specifically.
Possibly.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll get more answers over the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I agree on the prototype design, although I just wanted to comment earlier, the flat back, the sort of flat design, I actually kind of like just the overall shape of it, even though it's kind of flat and back to candy bar-like in terms of a phone design.
You know, it's cheaper to make. So it's a possibility Apple might be going back to the flat back like they had on the first gen iPhone. However,
how would they get it any thinner, I guess, is the question. I guess maybe sometimes people think the sort of tapered edge gives it a thinner feel, even if it's thicker. So,
right,
I don't know.
And it fits in your hand a little bit better because as your hand curves to cup the phone, that curved back, which I originally, when I first saw it, thought, oh, this is going to be crap. I am not going to be happy with this. And then was surprised when I put one in my hand and went, oh, actually, it feels good. Huh.
Yeah, it's probably true. It's probably more grippable. I found that with the slight tapered edge. It might be less of a tapered edge, more like the iPad. And I think some people have did some, you know, fake mock-ups of what a next-gen, fourth-gen iPhone might be kind of based on the iPad design. And I could see that because it is a little more grippable on the edge. It doesn't feel like it's going to slip out of your hand when you're just kind of holding it by the edge.
Yeah. So, and I have a feeling that if not sooner, by like the second week in July, we'll be able to test it out for ourselves and see just how well whatever Apple has up their sleeve fits in our hand.
Yep.
So have we killed this? Because I probably need to get to picks because I'm going to have to run.
Yeah, we're ready for picks. Adam, you want to go first?
No, hold on. I got to figure out what I want. So
okay, Jeff, do you
want
to go first? Because I have mine ready.
I can go first. I don't mind.
All right.
So, but by coincidence, my pick is Art Studio.
Cool. Tell me more.
All right. So you can draw with your finger and you have multiple tools. So you have like paint brushes and spray paint cans and pencils and erasers and a fill tool. And you can have multiple layers in your documents and actually check your email. Because I emailed you a picture that I was drawing while...
Oh, yeah, I saw that come up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a chicken.
Yeah, I drew you a...
That's a very nice chicken.
A digital chicken with my finger. That was just like a couple minutes of time to do that. And the chicken outline is on one layer, and then I used the spray paint tool on a layer behind it and added the color. And that was like 3 or 4 minutes of time and then emailed it off to you. So it's easy to use and you can make multiple documents. You have layer support. So it's like, I can't remember how many layers you can do. It's like 3 or 5, something like that. And it's just a fun little application. And what was it, 99 cents?
Yeah, I think it's on sale because the Art Studio for the iPhone is $4.
Oh, okay. So then it must be on sale.
Yeah, so it's on
sale. I would
assume 80%
off. It's going to be $4 at some point, too.
Yeah. Art Studio, one word. So I'm guessing you mean Art Studio for iPad.
Art Studio for iPad.
Yep. And get in the App Store. Adam?
All right. I got it.
Okay.
Did I do My Congress yet?
No.
Have you guys seen this app?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I found it because it's iPad, but I think it's also available iPhone, iPod Touch, and it's free. And I am not traditionally a political person very much, but we have these elections every once in a while, and I need to find out about information on voting for people, right? And so what's cool about this app is you bring it up, and it has all of your representatives in Congress,
ooh,
all the congressional members in a big, long list, and you can tap on and pick any one of them. So, you know, like John McCain, if you want to see what he's doing, you click on that, gives you a little bio, a link to their website, their contact information, including their phone number, email, all of that stuff. Then it has, below that, it has three little feeds. It has a recent news feed. So any local newspaper articles, any articles written about that congressman, and you can click on that and get that information. If they have a YouTube channel, it has all the YouTube videos in there. If they have a Twitter feed, it has their Twitter feed in there so you can see what they're tweeting. And more importantly, it has a link to this thing called Open Congress. You guys know about Open Congress? I did not know about this Open Congress. Open Congress, you click that, it brings up in the app a little web browser. And within Open Congress, it has all of their voting record, a money trail of their donations and where their donations came from, news and blog articles, comments. It's like a wealth of information about any member of Congress.
That looks like a great app.
Totally free.
This is really cool.
Yeah.
I was just blown away, and it looks great on the iPad.
Yeah.
So I have the iPad version. I haven't tried out the iPhone.
I don't think there is an iPhone version. I think it's just
bummer.
Yeah, it's called My Congress, though. And there's one other thing that I totally forgot to mention. And this one is kind of, it kind of goes to you, Adam, because you've always pointed out that free apps are kind of rated a little lower than for pay apps. And that's that's, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that apps ask you to rate them when you delete them.
Mm-hmm.
And in 4.0, that goes away. So when you delete an app, it won't ask you to rate it, which is probably good. Probably just want to rate it like after you've enjoyed it for a while.
Yeah. So My Congress, it's going to be very helpful, I think, when it gets around to election time and I'm trying to decide between a couple different representatives, and I can like actually look at their voting record and go, oh, you know what? I don't want to vote for them. It's just access to information and just how it's formatted and presented on the iPad in this case is just really nice.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. And it's free.
It's free.
Yeah. Okay. So my app pick is IM Plus for the iPad specifically. But if you already have IM Plus for the iPhone or the iPod Touch, it'll work. It's a universal application, so they won't make you pay another $10. But I didn't really like IM Plus on the iPhone, but I love it on the iPad because, one, it works pretty well. There are some bugs, and it's, it freaks out a little bit. But for the most part, it's nice, and here's the killer feature. It has a built-in web browser that you can access whenever you want to. So you have your buddy list on the far left, or the active chats, depending on which tab you've toggled. And then on the right, you have your active chats, and you can swipe between them, and it works pretty well, and it's pretty good. And then a little bit further, there's a little tab that's sticking out. It just says browser or something like that. And you tap it, the browser slides over. You can still see the left-hand panel that shows your online buddies. So if someone pops online that you want to talk to, you can see when that happens and click on that and talk to them. But you can browse the web. And even cooler, I've tried this with streaming video and streaming audio. If you bring up like a streaming video page in the browser and you want to go back to your chat, you just tap the little hide button and you'll still hear the audio. The video will continue playing in the background and you can do your chats and then switch back real quick and check it out and nothing's interesting happening. Okay, go back to your chats. It's really cool. You can do web browsing. There's no support for multiple tabs or multiple windows right now. There's no history or any exciting features outside of the fact that it, lets you browse the web. But I think that's enough. So if you're looking for an IM app, I would highly recommend IM Plus for the iPad. Have you guys tried that?
Cool.
No, I'm looking at it right now.
Check it out now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Have you guys been using maybe AIM?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, this is better than AIM. But that doesn't say a whole lot.
Does IM Plus support AIM groups?
I don't know.
That's always been a big annoyance for me, trying to do group chats in AIM on the iPhone or now on the iPad.
There is IM Plus Lite, although I don't think that's for the iPad. I think that's just an iPhone app. You have to get the $10 version to get it on the iPad.
I'm all for supporting app developers, so your endorsement's enough for me, Michael.
On the iPad, at least, I'm not a fan on the iPhone, to be clear about that. And it just may be because I'm I'm looking at the screenshots right now. On the iPhone, it's atrocious. It's really bad. But they have the built-in web browser on there, too. So if you don't care about UI, then yeah, go for it. Cool. $10, IM Plus. All right, so getting out of here, you can try gotoassist.com/Allie. That's the URL you go to get your free 30 days of GoToAssist Express. Gotoassist.com/Allie. You can find our iPhone picks in the show notes at iPhoneAllie.com/podcast, and that URL will be changing soon. I'll let you know. Send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAllie.com, and you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, and Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. As always, it's a blast.
It's a blast to have you. And Adam Christensen from the MacCast, MacCast.com and Twitter.com/MacCast. It's a blast having you too, Adam.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And with that, another episode is done. We're going to have a different sign off.
Yeah, you almost forgot what the show was called.
The thing.
I think you should say Picard out.
Picard out. An iPod,
iPod, iPod, iPod, iPod, iPod. A phone. This is Michael Johnston. Beam me up. An iPod, 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 iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet
communicator. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? A stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers.